We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
You're in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Hour number two, coming at you right now. Frank Bohl, godfather of Kansas City sports in the 4 o'clock hour. Data scientist Eric Eager, a great friend of the program from Pro Football Focus in the 5. So still a lot coming up here. We're going to shift gears and talk a little baseball right now. RJ Anderson joins us here in the program from CBS Sports. He's brought to you by our friends at Family Leisure with the warm weather, whether you need a pool, spa, hot tub, trampoline, gorilla basketball, goal, grill, patio furniture, anything that involves family and fun in the outdoors at your house, it's at Family Leisure. 25 plus years in Kansas City, locally owned and operated. Find them online at familyleisure.com. See them in person at K10 and Ridgeview. And remember, mention the program, mention 810. You save even more. So tell them you heard about us. Heard about them right here on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's welcome RJ Anderson to the T-Mobile guest line. RJ, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good. Looking forward to baseball season firing up and excited about anything and everything being written about our Kansas City Royals. One of the things that was up on CBS, by the way, I'm always a big fan. You guys churn out a tremendous amount of not just quantity of content, but quality content, but a great quantity of it as well. So I always like to say thanks for the great work you guys all do over there. But one of them is the breakout candidate, right? I read breakout candidates for all 30 teams. I'm excited. Like, here we go. Adalberto Mondesi, this is the year it all comes together for him. No, Nicky Lopez is going to break out and solidify that lineup because he's basically been a hole in the lineup while they've been trying to get him in there. I'm all excited. I can't. There's a center fielder. Kyle Isbell is going to come busting out of the minor leagues. And no offense to Jake Newberry, but I couldn't have been more let down by Jake Newberry. No anger. Just my wants and aspirations for the ball club. Let's start with Jake Newberry. Define what a breakout year would mean for Jake Newberry this year.
Yeah, so just to be clear with the column, we try to make it a little different from everybody else's. And what I mean by that is we raise the difficulty level. So we don't really gravitate toward top prospects. I mean, you know, some of the names you mentioned there are pretty well known and pretty well regarded. So I don't think anyone would be surprised if Mondesi goes on to have a big year or if Nicky Lopez figures it out or what have you. So there are a lot of relievers in there and there are a lot of players who frankly are not going to break out, but it's just a matter of trying to make it more interesting for the author and for the audience. And hopefully it accomplishes that. But with Newberry, you know, he's interesting to me and he's probably interesting to anyone who likes relievers because he has the slider that's really good. And last season he used it more than half the time and he's still able to generate something like 49% whiffs, which is, you know, swinging strikes over swings. So that's a really, really good rate. And I would like to see him use it more because, you know, he has this ability to not only throw it as a chase pitch out of the zone to right-handers, but also on the outside corner to lefties. And, you know, that kind of command over the pitch is not something you always see with relievers. And I think it can make him a pretty good reliever and a pretty good weapon out of that Kansas City bullpen if he even cranks it up more this coming year.
Yeah, that's and the Royals have done a great job of developing relievers and having a stock bullpen, and it was obviously, you know, maybe the backbone of what they did in winning a world championship in 2015. And all of baseball took notice and reliever salaries went up and teams started stacking that bullpen. The old HDH became a model for a lot of other people. Yeah. And the Royals, as we know, can't just buy all those guys on the market the way the other teams have. So Newberry would be a really good piece. And I get it. And I like the call because being a fantasy nerd and a guy who does, you know, kind of dynasty fantasy baseball, I'm to the nth degree of nerddom. So I am looking at guys like Jake Newberry. So I love if there's like a snitch, I grab him later, put him into my farm system to have to lock and load later. I'm all about it. But I also like it because you said if Mondesi broke out, it wouldn't be, you know, that big a shock because he was a big prospect. He was at one point.
Yeah.
He got to the big leagues, got sent back. You know, no longer appeared on the top prospect list. And I get it because he'd been to the big leagues. And so you kind of just take their name off the list. And people not getting, you know, not writing about him anymore. Then he comes up and he'll have four great weeks. And I'm going to tell you a story here in Kansas City. When Patrick Mahomes broke out in 2018, in September of 18, and he has a marvelous first four games. They're 4-0. He throws for more touchdowns than anyone's thrown in their first four games. The conversation in this town was, wow, we have the best young player in the NFL and the best young player in baseball in Adalberto Mondesi. Like, it's like having A-Rod and, you know, better than Brady, right? Like, they were put in the same breath. And now here we sit and still waiting. The Royals are now into arbitration with Mondesi, and he's never sniffed a 300 on-base percentage. When is it not likely that – when would you call it a surprise that he broke out? Like, how long does he have to go not getting on base before we go, you know what, this guy is just Alcides Escobar with some more speed?
To be fair, I mean, Alcides Escobar with some more speed is still probably a starting caliber shortstop. But, no, that's a fair point. I believe he's entering his age 25 season. So I would say if we get another year or two down the road, probably closer to 2 to 3 years down the road, honestly, then you probably just sort of accept that he is what he is. And, you know, I think he has his charms to him. You know, I think if you look at some of the advanced metrics, he's usually a league average player, a little better, even with that on-base percentage, because of his defense and his secondary value that he can offer. And, you know, he's mostly hit for an okay average by today's standards, at least. So, you know, I think the bigger issue with him, or one of the bigger issues with him, is availability. I know he played in almost all of their games last year, but I'm not sure if he's appeared in 100 games in the season before then. So I'd like to see him stay healthy in addition to improving his play discipline, because, you know, he can offer some power, he can offer some speed, and he offers good defense. And, you know, he's a fun player to watch if you're willing to overlook some of the flaws, I think. So, you know, to answer the question, I would say I'd give him another year or two, and then we'll revisit whether he's ever realistically going to take that next step and become more than maybe a league average type player.
You made me look it up, and I should be should correct something I said. He did have a 306 on base percentage in 2018, so I want to correct that mistake that I made. 284 career on base percentage, and for the 100 game mark, he had 102 games, so just barely got there in 2019. Yeah, availability is part of it. What do you think about this theory? The Royals gave 4 years, $25 million to Hunter Dozier, and I'd like to get an outsider's perspective on this. The Royals have always said Mondesi's going to be a star. He's going to be a star. And you bring up his name, or when he gets hot, man, they can't stop gushing about how good this guy is, and he does everything, and what a difference he makes, right? And during those times, it's fun to watch him in those games. It is. I mean, he is clearly an amazing talent to watch. But if you're willing to give 4 years, $25 million to Hunter Dozier, and if you're so convinced on Mondesi, wouldn't you be doing everything you can to extend him? I mean, they're at the exact same spot in their career as far as arbitration time goes, and Mondesi's younger. And I understand that there's the other side. Maybe Mondesi and his people are like, screw it, we haven't had our big year. We'll wait till we have our big year, then we'll sign. That may, it may be as simple as that from what's going on behind closed doors. Maybe they've tried to sign him a number of times. But just from a practicality standpoint, if you're so sold on a guy, shouldn't you be doing everything you can to get him signed right now at the cheapest possible price?
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair assessment. I think the Dozier extension is interesting for reasons independent of Mondesi. But, yeah, you make a fair point there. If they really do believe in his ability to turn things around or to take that next step, and he's open to the concept of, you know, signing a long-term extension the way Dozier did, then, yeah, it would make a lot of sense to pursue that with him.
Why did you say the Dozier extension is interesting? I agree. I'm just curious for your reasons.
Well, because, you know, the way baseball works nowadays, teams do not like to make unnecessary moves. And with Dozier, you know, he's in his late 20s, and, you know, last year plus, he's certainly been an above-average hitter, but he may have already hit his peak in 2019. And, you know, it's just a deal that kind of is a microcosm of how different Dayton Moore operates versus almost every other general manager nowadays. And I don't say that as a criticism. I think it's cool that we have one GM, perhaps only one GM, who views running a baseball team as a partnership with his players. And it's not just, you know, their replaceable cogs or what have you. He seems to be genuine in how he treats his players. And you look at the extensions he signed with Salvador Perez and with Whit Merrifield, and, you know, a lot of teams would have signed those deals and then traded them if they weren't going to compete that year or in the near future. He hasn't done that. And also, like this offseason, you know, he's went out there and he's traded for Benintendi and he's signed Mike Minor and signed Carlos Santana. And I think that Dayton Moore might be one of the few executives who, you know, kind of gets it. They're in an entertainment industry, but also, you know, you need to have those relationships with your players and, you know, treat them with respect and operate in good faith. And, you know, you don't have to agree with everything Dayton Moore does and says. But at the same time, I kind of respect and I find it refreshing that he operates this way. I wish more teams would do it at this point.
I do too. You know, I think there's, you know, probably every industry has things that they say they wish the industry did it this way or the industry would be better if we did it. But at the end of the day, you're still graded by whatever your scorecard is in sales. It's putting dollars on the books. You can say, hey, it'd be better if we had, you know, better client relationships. But that's great if you're building those. If you don't put money on the books, you're going to be fired. Dayton Moore, theoretically, the same is true. We're going to find out with John Sherman as the owner because Dayton Moore is one of the more, what would you say? Well, certainly interesting case studies of a general manager. He's been on the job. It'll be 15 years coming up this June. And he has two pennants. That's pretty good over 15 years, right? Only two playoffs. You'd like to have more than that. A world championship. If you win one every 15 years, you're actually getting to a World Series once every 15 years would be meaning you took your turn. 15 teams in each league. So, you know, he's been ahead of the average as far as getting there. If you win one in 15 years, you're ahead. But then he has the third worst winning percentage in baseball since he took over. Yeah. Like, is he the most difficult, because he does it so differently, is he the most difficult guy to get your arms around projecting whether or not he's going to be successful in the future?
That's a good point. I don't know if I'd say he's the most difficult. I think that it's really complex and complicated to try to evaluate general managers. I know we may try to make it easy by just looking at wins and winning percentage, but there's a lot more that goes into it because you have to adjust for expectations of that market or that team. You know, winning with the Royals is a little different than winning with the Yankees. That's not to say that, you know, some of the same traits can't work in Kansas City that would work in New York, but, you know, I think it's fair to say that his overall record is not necessarily impressive. And, you know, aside from what that 3 or 4 year stint where they were actually a competitive team, but yeah, teams have mostly been, let's say, average at best. I think below average would probably be a little more accurate of assessment there, but at the same time, I think you can kind of respect what he stands for and the way he goes about his business. And I do agree that at some point, you know, maybe the way he goes about it isn't going to be enough to save his job, but, you know, they do have some interesting young players en route, and, you know, maybe he'll do just enough to, again, save his job. And hopefully, you know, if you're looking for some of his approach to rub off another team, you kind of hope that the Royals overperform this year. And then maybe other teams will say, maybe the market inefficiency these days is behaving in good faith and actually trying to win games, even if it doesn't look like we are necessarily an elite team at this point.
If you ask me to pick a general manager that will outperform expectations, I think the smart money would be on Dayton Moore because he's done it several times. I think he has found market inefficiencies, right? That's what we've talked about it many times here in the program. That's what Moneyball was about. It wasn't about on-base percentage. It was about that on-base percentage wasn't valued. And the other things, they didn't think the college players were valued as much, and so they went in and they focused on those market inefficiencies. And I think that's exactly what Dayton Moore did when he put together the bullpen. Like I talked about, the HDH, you know, bullpen, he loaded up with three closers And basically, you know, from talking to guys, he didn't back ass into that. That was his plan. I mean, I remember Rusty Kuntz telling me the story. He came in one day and he said, look, we can't compete for these ace starters, but our bullpen is going to pitch the equivalent of two starting pitchers worth of innings. Like for less money, we can put together an ace bullpen that basically gives us two ace starters kind of innings. And that's what he did. And I think he revolutionized. And I think he also valued frequency of contact with his hitters, and I think he had a team. Would you agree, in looking back, the lesson of the Royals is he put together a team that their frequency of contact meant that if they could get to the postseason when the fourth and fifth starters and the middle relievers don't pitch anymore, that really what I think a lot of power hitters all take advantage of, and you got guys that are strike throwers in the zone and a lot of the power gets negated, that he had a team that was ready to win playoff games. The question was he going to be able to get them to the playoffs? When they did, it's clear their formula worked really well. Where the Billy Beane formula of take and rake is great to grind through 162 games, but it obviously sucks when you get to the postseason.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's interesting because in some ways Moore kind of brought about that philosophical shift league-wide as it pertains to bullpens, because I remember it was him and also it was the Baltimore Orioles who loaded up on relievers, and they kind of had this rotation full of number four starters. But at the end of the day, you know, they would still win games and they would still get to the postseason. Now, obviously, it was the Orioles who actually got to the top of the mountain. And since then, you have seen a shift where the so-called smart teams are kind of more focused on building these super bullpens than they are building super rotations. So I think it's really interesting to see. But on the other side, you know, the contact trend hasn't necessarily followed suit. And I think part of that is just because of how the game has changed, what they prioritize when you're teaching hitting. You know, it used to be make contact, and if you struck out, that was a bad thing. And nowadays, it's less of a bad thing, especially if you can hit, you know, 30 home runs a season or what have you. I do think there's going to be a cycle where we cycle back toward more contact. And I think that, you know, it's just a matter of time kind of before we flip the switch. Even with the bullpen stuff, I think at some point a team is going to win with a strong rotation, and you're going to see teams gravitate back towards starting pitchers. Although, to be fair, the Nationals kind of did that, and, you know, teams haven't necessarily responded in kind. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting to think of, like, Moore's legacy here and some of the philosophical changes he brought about by, you know, having those Royals teams be as successful as they were for those three or so years.
Has he identified maybe another, you know, inefficiency in the market when he's gone after all this power starting pitching that he's saying, okay, again, I can't buy these guys, but if I just overflow it, so people are so interested in the swing and miss pitcher that if I can flood my system with those guys, I'll have some to put on my team. And I'm expecting what we're going to see is sometime during this year or more likely the next offseason, the reverse of what I call the reverse James Shields trades. They had a bunch of position players from pick and high for a lot of years, and he moved Will Myers, who was the number one prospect at that time, the second half of the season grades, and got the pitcher that he needed. Now he's got all the pitching. He's really, I think, two bats short of having a complete lineup and has no depth whatsoever on the big league club. Is that we're going to see him get some guys to the big leagues, and we're going to see him move some guys for a couple of bats, and I mean good bats, to finish this thing off. Is the power pitching that he's accumulated, maybe people had gone too far towards the bullpen, and so he jumped on some of the starting pitching, and he's maybe again ahead of the curve?
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I mean, the Royals have really prioritized collegiate pitching the last few drafts, and I think there was one draft where they took a college pitcher of like each of their first four picks or five picks, mm-hmm. something like that. And, you know, at some point, if you do a good job of developing those pitchers, you're going to have more pitchers than spots. Now, granted, it doesn't always work out that cleanly, but most of the cases, it doesn't work out at all, or at least doesn't work out, you know, as well as you would like it to. But in some senses, it's also kind of a throwback to how the Braves used to run their organization. And of course, Dayton Moore came from the Braves and was a big part of their scouting department back in the day. So, you know, it's hard to say if this is necessarily him like identifying an inefficiency, or if it's just him kind of getting back to his roots, or, you know, just taking who they perceive to be the best player on the board. So, you know, I don't have great insight into his strategy there or his thinking, but, you know, if they do a good enough job of developing these arms, then, yeah, certainly you're going to have the opportunity to trade them for hitters at the big league level who could help fill out the lineup and who could help the Royals get back into contention in the coming years.
RJ Anderson writes about Major League Baseball for CBS Sports. You guys did a composite, kind of all came together, and so the Royals might not have been on your watch, but only one person gave the Royals the grade for most surprising offseason. If I apply your, we didn't want to go with guys that are high prospects or everything like that, like the Padres splashing money and big trades all around. I know they got a bunch of acclaim, and I'm not saying you should apply that, but if I did, the Royals would clearly be one that would be a Jake Newberry, right? Like, you have to like what they did, even though it may not result in a 95-win season.
Yeah, and I think, like I said earlier, I do appreciate their offseason. I think that there's a good chance that Carlos Santana is going to bounce back based on some of his underlying metrics. Now, I also thought the same of Justin Smoke last year, and, you know, where's Justin Smoke nowadays? I believe he's overseas, so not foolproof there. But I also think Benintendi still has some potential, especially if he gets away from trying to lift everything and goes back to being a contact hitter. And that would seem to be, you know, a real good fit with that Kansas City philosophy that we talked about. And then, you know, Mike Minor, you know, he had some issues last year where his slider got hit over the fence a lot. If the ball is deadened, like they've been talking about, and you know, if he makes some tweaks to that pitch, maybe he goes back to being a number three or a number two starter. And you know, you can kind of see the potential there in all these moves. You kind of see the logic. And it may not match up exactly to what Kansas City is thinking when they sign these players. But you know what I'm saying. You can see the upside there. So, yeah, sure. I think they had a good offseason. I don't know if they're necessarily going to be, you know, competing for a playoff spot. I think that's probably a little bit overzealous at this point. But I do appreciate that they put their foot forward and actually tried. And I think you can compare them very favorably. You can compare and contrast, and it makes the Royals look very favorable when you compare them to someone like the Baltimore Orioles, who just didn't do anything this winter, or the Colorado Rockies, who traded Nolan Arenado and just kind of sat on their hands and crying broke now. So, you know, there are a lot of bad teams in baseball right now. The Royals are at least respectable in how they go about their business, and I think that does make a difference to not only to, you know, your local fan base, but also on the national level.
I want to hit you with a couple of national things real quick before we let you go, RJ, and that is the comments in Seattle of Mather.
Yeah.
And listen, talking about not wanting to pay a translator and those kind of things, I'm not talking about that. In fact, I actually think that those things got put out there just to actually give them more ammunition for why they really fired him. They fired him because the Players Association now has an executive on record as saying that they manipulate service time. I don't believe anything else had anything to do with it. All I have to do is point to that you've got Mickey Callaway, who had a job with the Indians and then got a job again, and now apparently everybody and their brother knew he was this philandering, you know, sending pornographic images to people. All this stuff was going on, and Terry Francona's kid is saying, yeah, my dad knew about it. You know, they're going to get blitzed on that. I bring that up with the Mather to say that they don't really care about anything other than winning and making money. And if there are owners that care otherwise, and I feel pretty confident we've got one and got an ownership group in Kansas City, when they don't let go of any minor leaguers, don't fire anybody, don't furlough anybody, and don't give any pay cuts to anybody in the entire organization during the pandemic, they put their money where their mouth is, that they're not just about the bottom line. But most owners, that's kind of what it is. First of all, do you agree with me that everything else they found on Mather was just to give them more reason to fire him, right? Like I actually think he had a case. If you just fire him for popping off about what we know they all did, suppressing the service time, then he's got a pretty good lawsuit against you. So they're like, well, wait a minute, let's get all the dirt we got on him so he can't come back at us. But the real reason why he was fired was because he put on record something that the Players Association is clearly going to use against the owners in the collective bargaining agreement that comes to an end after this year.
Oh, I'm certain that's probably part of the problem, but I'm not sure it's the entire one, because to be fair, he did make some pretty ugly comments about Iwakuma, who still works with the organization, and about Julio Rodriguez, who's one of their top youngsters. And you add in with what he said about the Jared Kelenic negotiations, and you know, there's just a lot of, I mean, the Mariners are in a position where those young players are basically the lifeblood of that franchise. And if they're going to ever break that playoff job, they're going to need them. And I think insulting them or, you know, giving them reason to feel like maybe the organization isn't acting in their best interest is a really, really dumb idea. On top of, you know, the hateful or, you know, offensive things that he said elsewhere in that interview. So I think there was a lot that could be used against them. The service time thing, though, yeah, absolutely. The union, you know, glued to that and going to use that. So I think it was probably a combination of everything leading to his demise. Now, I think the concerning thing is, you know, if he's willing to say that to a group of, you know, rotarists or whatever they're called, then think about what he's saying behind closed doors or in his office to, you know, the fellow Mariners executives. I think there's a lot of ugliness that was revealed there.
And likewise, and I just ask you what you think is going to happen with the Cleveland Indians when that kind of behavior is going on. Like I said, the Terry Francona's son says Terry knew about what was going on there.
Yeah.
And even though the Indians are trying to claim that they had no idea these things were happening, it speaks to the good old boy network and the good old white boy network, too, if you throw in the comments that Mather made that's going on around baseball. What will baseball do in this situation with Callaway and the Indians?
Probably not much of anything. I mean, you know, baseball has systemic issues, specifically with race and with gender. And, you know, if you're not a white male, a straight white male, for the most part, baseball doesn't really care about you. And I think we've seen that time and time again. And, you know, this is the system that has been built. And I think that I am very skeptical that it's this system that produces and enables and empowers individuals like Callaway and Mather can actually fix itself. You know, anyone who rises in the system is probably not going to be willing or able to disassemble the system themselves or make meaningful adjustments to it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's too cynical. But my guess is, you know, MLB will kind of just push this under the rug. Maybe you'll see a spine. Maybe you'll see a suspension. I don't know. I'm just very skeptical that anything meaningful is going to come out of this. And I hope I'm wrong. But, you know, realistically, I don't ever give MLB the benefit of the doubt on making positive, meaningful changes in these things.
We're talking right now with RJ Anderson from CBS Sports. He covers baseball, does a great job covering baseball. Time for our final four. Four quick questions. You just tell me the first thing that pops into your mind. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If an orthopedic or sports injury puts you on the bench, the same experts that care for the Royals, they can see you quickly. Request an appointment at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I will start you with this. What will the Royals' record be this year?
Let's go with 75 wins.
I'll take it. That's the over, so I can run to Vegas and kind of get down on that. I'm on the over 71.5. I said 78, so I will take 75, though. I'm happy with that.
Right,
Brady Singer of the Kansas City Royals made his debut last year. We're very impressed overall. No, that's a projection. He didn't go 9-10. Let me see. What did he go last year? He went 4-5. Right, with an ERA of 4.06. How many career wins for Brady Singer?
Oh, geez.
He's got four right now.
Like, let's say like 60.
60?
60. Let's see. 56. That might be a little high. Here's the thing. Like, pitchers get hurt, and
right.
Nothing against Brady Singer, but usually if you're betting the under on like 50 career wins, you're doing pretty well, you know, as a whole. So, 60 might even be way too optimistic, frankly.
Oh, I'm not going to let you back up from it, then. I'm not going to let you put a smaller number.
Well, I hope he wins 60 plus now, so good luck, Mr. Singer.
Yeah. I had him at 370, but okay. Okay.
In the ballpark.
I'm a little more bullish. Clearly, I'm bullish on Singer. Does Mike Matheny make the playoffs with the Royals, yes or no?
How long is his contract? Is it 3 years? 2 more years or something like that?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I'll go with yes, but
okay,
we'll see. Maybe the third year.
Okay, all right. So you're not feeling it this year or next, it sounds like. All right. Finally, and most importantly, you're at the ballpark. You get a hot dog. What are you putting on it?
I actually do not use condiments for the most part. I'm weird like that. But I also don't usually get hot dogs. I get a soft pretzel, a hot pretzel, whatever you want to call it, and, you know, get some mustard on there. That's not all for me.
Yeah, I'll take it. You just answered a lot right there. No condiments. Don't really get hot dogs. I think we got to the bottom of a lot of the answers we got right there. I'm just kidding, RJ. Hey, great stuff. I really appreciate the conversation. Thanks so much, and look forward to talking to you on down the road, my friend.
Yep, thank you, and stay safe, everybody.
You bet. You too, RJ. RJ Anderson from CBS does a great job covering baseball. We'll come back, talk about some of the things we discussed there, get his thoughts, or react to his thoughts on the Kansas City Royals. 913-810-810 if you want to grab a line. 913-810-810 Royals Chiefs Sporting. K-State, Missouri, KU, always a topic here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
Travis.
Hey, how are you? All right. Happy Wednesday, everybody.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the good sense, end of the hour answer. Michigan lost by 23 last night. What school had the worst regular season loss in a year in which they were a number one seed in the NCAAs? As Michigan still seems to be on pace for.
Wait. Lay the question on me again.
Worst regular season loss. Which school had the worst regular season loss by point differential in a year in which they were a number one seed in the NCAA tournament? There have been four teams that have lost by more than 30 points and gone on to be a number one seed.
Really?
Someone asked about when was the last time someone lost by 20, and I found four in the last 5 years, the team has lost by at least 20 and gone on to one seed. But I found, going all the way back to 79, four teams have had a 30-plus point loss and been a one seed. Who had the worst loss?
Did Kansas get wrecked by, like, Oregon and then come back to be a one?
Nope.
Well, if we've ever been a number one at Syracuse, which we have, we're certainly a candidate to have crapped in our hat that bad along the way.
Wasn't Syracuse?
That's amazing. I'll take one more guess. Well, Tom Izzo's teams tend to sometimes have a slow start and play a rigorous schedule and then get going. So, Tom Izzo?
Nope. Here are the four going backwards in chronological order, and the first one of the four is the worst.
I'm going to write this down, Curtis.
2014, Virginia lost to Tennessee 87-52. That's 35 points.
Wow.
2012, North Carolina lost to Florida State 90-57.
What happened to Roy's team?
2009, Louisville lost to Notre Dame 90-57. And in 1994, what would eventually be a pair of number one seeds, Arkansas 120, Missouri 68. Tigers would go on to go 14-0 in the Big Eight and be a number one seed, lost to number two seed Arizona by 20 in the regional final. Arkansas would win the national championship, 52 points.
Is that the only time Mizzou's been a one seed?
Yes.
One seed.
Beat.
Wow. Sounds like Arizona might have deserved to be the one seed if you beat the one seed by 20. I don't know.
They were a good team. That Arizona team, obviously. They went to the Final Four, clearly, after beating Missouri. But, see, beat Syracuse in overtime en route. I think that was Adrian Autry and somebody else on that 94 team.
I believe I watched that game in a building that got torn down 2 weeks ago.
Really? I remember why I watched it. I remember where'd you watch it?
A somewhat notorious. What was the most acclaimed building that was torn down 2 to 4 weeks ago? I don't know. Time flies sometimes. I think it was about 2 weeks ago. It was on the news. It was of note that it was being torn down.
I don't know. I'm blanking completely.
Jed?
Dude, you know me. I'm lucky if I remember last segment.
I had traveled back, I believe, to... I know where I traveled back to. I traveled back to New Jersey. That was in 94, right?
Mm-hmm.
Traveled back to New Jersey to do our baseball league that began when we were in college. At Syracuse, was staying at my friend's house in Edison, New Jersey. And being that we were all so giddy, we were 22. So, but early on when we were freshmen, we would go down to Atlantic City. And because as long as you didn't buy alcohol, they wouldn't mess with you gambling. Like, they didn't, nobody cared if anyone underage gambled. They just care if they underage drank. So if you didn't have any drinks at the table, they didn't care. Like, they would look at, they'd take any turd fake ID and you could play.
Right.
And so we like to go down to Atlantic City when we go back to my buddies. You know, a couple of my friends lived in Edison, New Jersey, which is just south of New York City. And so we watched Syracuse lose the game. We think they should have won. Bad calls. Cost us, of course, at the Trump Plaza.
Oh, wow.
In Atlantic City, New
Jersey.
That's
fantastic.
And they just, I guess it had been vacant for a while, and they just blew it up.
Wow.
On the boardwalk. So, yeah. I can't even go visit that memory anymore.
As soon as you started down that road about watching the game in AC, I was like, oh, damn, I knew that one offhand.
I think I even told you guys story. Well, there goes where I watched Syracuse, Missouri, OT in 1994.
That beats my location.
Where were you?
Are we still at Tomfoolery's down on the plaza?
I think that's still there.
Is it?
I think
it's gone.
I don't know.
Is it? Look it up. It was a good location. I agree.
Friend
I liked it.
Marty Wall used to play down there, and that's where I watched it. And thought, wow, we're going to the
Marty did play there for a long time. Was he playing all the way back there in 94?
Maybe not then, but he and Phil and Gary used to play
there. You
were
in
there
anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Foolery is still 612 West 47th Street.
That's it.
Appears to be there still.
Okay, good. Good.
How do you like that?
I'm glad. I've had some interesting meetings in Tom Foolery.
Shane texted me, it closed.
Did he? I thought it did.
I don't know. I'm an idiot. The internet. I don't know how to operate the internet clearly. To redirect our conversation slightly, how about RJ Anderson with a lot of great information and getting the question about hot dogs right and going, I don't really like hot dogs. Soft pretzels the way to go with ballpark fare.
All right. First of all, I'll come back to that in a minute. But I is Shane positive about that?
I don't. He said it definitively when he just texted me. But Shane's nervous and doesn't really know a lot.
That sucks. That was a good spot. So.
I'm seeing a story from 2018 that they relocated downtown under a new name. So the place isn't there, but they closed. But they're in a.
They closed.
Yeah, that's too bad.
They closed. Yeah, that sucks. Is that spot available? Maybe we should go open a restaurant. I hear that's a good business.
There isn't anybody over the age of 30 who doesn't have a story from a night there.
Yeah. I mean, I have fun drinking stories, and then, like, that was a spot where different people in sports that, you know, I'd be talking to about different things, I'd be like, well, let's get together. I'll buy you a beer. Where do you want to go? Let's go to Tom Fuller's.
Yeah.
I have a couple of good – I'll tell you during the break some of the folks that I – one, you'll be like, you're kidding me. I'm like, nope. Right there, had beers with them. You'll be like – wow, I would have never pegged that you had beers with that person. I'm like, yep. So how about that? The hot dog, you can eat it. There's nothing wrong with hot dogs. Hot dogs are fantastic. You cannot be anti-hot dogs.
I'm not anti-hot dog, but I'm saying if I'm at a ballpark and I get to choose what I get to eat, I'm not choosing a hot dog. I'm with RJ Anderson. I'm getting a soft pretzel with cheese. It's just a superior food option.
No, it isn't about what's superior food option. It's about where you're at and what you're doing.
Right.
Eat a freaking hot dog.
Why? I don't want a hot dog. I want a freaking pretzel
don't like
and a
it.
Bag of peanuts. What the hell?
Eat a hot dog.
I'm fine with the peanuts, but I'm going to tell you on the pretzel. Like, I like a great pretzel with, like, different mustards and cheeses to dip in. It's fantastic. It's rarely found well perfected at the ballpark.
I disagree.
I'm fine with your passion for the pretzel, but don't tell me you go to the ballpark and you get anything more than a log slightly wrapped around into what kind of looks like a pretzel shape.
I disagree. Maybe I have better luck with when I go and scout out the pretzels. I'm not, if there's just one left, I'm certainly not going to be like, oh yeah, let me get that pretzel that's been sitting there since the third inning. No, I'm going to go in the third inning and be like, oh, let me get a fresh pretzel. It's just called being
a restaurant. If you go to a restaurant and they say, hey, we've got Bavarian pretzels and we've got these sauce and everything, I'm down. Let's
absolutely.
Go. Let's do
yeah.
It.
Yeah.
But at the ballpark?
In section 117, cold drink. Give me a hopefully warm hot dog bun, a little squished around it. Throw some mustard on that bad boy and three bites. See ya. That's a night at the park, man. I'm not looking for high quality, super high quality food. I want baseball food at the ballpark.
But I think that's part of the reason why the hot dog works is, it's pretty tough to screw up the hot dog.
Great listener of the program.
Truth.
My buddy Derek says, hot dogs are gross. A bratwurst, however, all day long. And he then follows
I'm
fat and will eat almost anything. So if he's saying that hot dogs are gross, I'm going to take my friend Derek's word for it. And I'm with them. Bratwurst
are
delicious.
There are some, I will grant you, there are some hot dogs that are gross. Okay, they're like, if they're not a good all beef hot dog, they can be gross. Right? But I got no problem. I like Polishes. I like Italian sausages. I like bratwurst. Yes, they're all still fatty meat leftovers crammed together and grilled up and whatever
stuffed
extra spices make them what they are.
Stuffed
I'm
into
down
a
with
tube.
All of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'll take it.
I'm good. And I don't know what the tube is, but the tube is good too.
Yeah, right.
I like the tube to be a little bit tough. Okay? A little blackened. We're good to go. That's quality eats. I'm a happy camper. All right, let's take a break because he's getting moody now. And I will, so he said, eat a bag of hot dogs, Jed. Let's go get it. Let's go get Jed a whole bag of hot dogs and make
gross. I'm not doing that. Do I have to do it during this break? I have to eat a whole bag of hot dogs.
Yes, a whole bag of hot dogs. We will take a break. We will talk a little more baseball when we come back here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro,
who's lost a tremendous amount of weight from last year, but still is a very big man.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We're going to talk to Frank Bull coming up in our next hour. We're talking a little baseball here this hour. RJ Anderson from CBS Sports was on with us earlier, and we're talking about the climate in baseball. You know, like with all the things going on, like, you know, the Me Too movement a few years ago, if you were the Cleveland Indians, wouldn't that have been the wake-up call? Like, oh, wait a minute, we gotta change our behavior here. Right? Because like, I think for a lot of people that was the wake-up call, or no, am I just naive?
No, I think for a lot of people it was, and but for a lot, it
but
probably should have been for more.
I think the people it was were for people who are like telling some sexist jokes, you know, or things like that, and they're like, oh, wait a minute, I got to be better. But the people that were the staunchest offenders have no concept of a right and a wrong in that.
Right. Correct.
Situation, and so it was no message to them.
They don't have that little thing that pops up on you that, oh wait, that was bad. I call it the little turkey button thing. Oh, I've said something wrong. People don't have that
ding.
Little.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
Yep.
No, they don't. And like Terry Francona, who I've been a big fan of him as a manager. I think he's a tremendous manager. I think he's been a good guy to cover. And his only fault in this, maybe there's no fault, but according to his son, he was well aware of what was going on. And I'm curious, what does baseball do in this situation? Like, do they fine the organization? I think they've got to at least do that, don't they?
Yeah, at a minimum.
Take away draft picks? Like, what is the penalty? I think we're entering a new era in professional sports. When you have what's going on with the Washington football team with their cheerleader calendar and how, you know, those women were treated by the football team, the leagues are going to have to come up with a policy and a penalty structure for people that violate that, or they're clearly going to face a lot more blowback from a lot of people. Because if it's just like, yeah, boy, that sucks. Well, we fired that guy, but it's all better now. And then it keeps happening. Eventually at some point. And these are the kind of things that to me, like, the government gets in, you know, the FBI is investigating college basketball. Come on. How about if you're going to give tens, hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer money to organizations, they at least have to operate under a code of proper conduct. And these are the kind of things that then you owe the state back this many millions of dollars. You owe the county back this much, the city. All the monies that are given to you are subject to you being penalized a refund if your organization is violating certain, you know, personal code of conduct policies. I think that might send the message.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Shell. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, in the last 10 years, only two schools have won a road game against a top five team by more points than Illinois last night. Name either one. Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.